U.S. factory activity slowed.
Based on hitting a shareholder value as market capitalization.
A lot more global. So creating more programming not only for, you know, us here in the English-speaking U.S.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, and 720 WGN.
Well, happy Friday, everyone. It was a short work week, or maybe your work week ended on Wednesday. I don't know, but a lot of us here on this Friday afternoon, glad you're listening as we come to you from high atop the Chicago River in the WGN radio studios. A little bit later in the program, we're going to talk earlier this week. We talked to Steve Robinson, who's a longtime marketing boss at Chick-fil-A. He's got a book out about his experiences there. And for time constraints, we couldn't play all of the interview, and in fact, some of the more controversial parts of his tenure there when it has to do with gay marriage and even the fight that Chick-fil-A is dealing with now when it comes to a couple of cities keeping them out of their airports, the FAA is investigating all of that. We talked to Steve Robinson about that part of his story, too, and we'll play that for you a little bit later in the program. Also, as I said, we'll talk to the CEO of Classic Cinemas about the movie business. Where do they make their money? Is it really in that endless bucket of popcorn, or is it in your ticket prices, things like that? But I want to start today with the jobs report. Not surprising, they came out for June, and it was a rousing number. On a phone line to help us understand all of it is Daniel Zhao, the economist, chief economist at Glassdoor. Daniel, welcome to the Business Lunch.
Hi, Steve. Thanks for having me.
Okay, so no one was expecting, well, maybe not no one, very few were expecting this number today, right?
Yeah, the number definitely shattered expectations. We saw 224,000 jobs added, which was a very, very healthy number across the board.
And it comes after a disappointing number from May, and I think the May numbers even were revised downward today.
Yeah, May was revised downward to 72,000, I believe, so stubbornly low, and quite honestly a disappointing number back in May.
Yeah, I would say so. So what does today's number mean? Does this mean that the economy is still alive and kicking, or what do we take out of these numbers?
Mm-hmm. Well, I would say that we shouldn't pay too much attention to just one month's number, but this report is certainly an indicator that the labor market is still chugging along as we enter the longest economic expansion on record.
The unemployment rate ticked up a tenth of a point to 3.7% as well, which is good news.
Well, it's a pretty small change. It actually is mostly down to a rounding difference, so I wouldn't pay too much attention to that increase.
Okay.
But it's still, that's still a historical low. 3.6 is the lowest we've seen in 50 years.
I thought it might be encouraging because it indicated that more people who were not in the hunt were getting in the hunt, but you're saying that's not necessarily the case?
Well, that is also the case as well. We were seeing more people entering the labor force, and that also contributed to the slightly higher unemployment rate.
Okay. When it comes to the numbers, I think one of the disappointing we've been talking for years now about this economic recovery and about how the hotter the jobs market got, the tighter the jobs market, how salaries would continue to go up or would catch up. I were above where we were, but it's still slower than it should be, correct?
Yeah, the disappointing number in this jobs report was wage growth coming in at 3.1%. That's been kind of a stagnating number over the last few months and actually a deceleration from late 2018. That's really the concerning figure to watch in months going forward.
What does it mean, though? I don't quite understand it, Daniel. How is it that wages aren't going up if the job market is as tight as it is?
Mm-hmm. Well, it is certainly unusual given how tight the labor market is, but it might be a sign that employers are hesitant to raise wages until they get a grasp of how various factors like trade tensions will play out and other economic uncertainty.
Yeah, but that's sort of this month's answer. It's been going on for years now.
Mm-hmm. Well, the economic recovery in general has been pretty slow. And as people have been pulled into the labor market slowly, that has kept a lid on wage growth. Eventually, we will run out of people to add to the labor force,
right.
And that will certainly put upward pressure on wages.
There are some sectors that are doing better than others, right? I mean, I would imagine there are fewer and fewer retail workers around, but and maybe that's why their wages are going up faster than others.
Yeah, on Glassdoor, we've actually seen that lower income workers, like you might expect in retail, so cashiers, customer service representatives, they've actually seen the fastest wage growth out of all occupations. And so that's certainly an indicator that even for lower income positions, there's a shortage of those workers in the labor market.
And that's good, too, right? I mean, if there's a sector that needs the increases to go faster than others, it would be in a lot of those entry-level jobs.
Yeah, absolutely. The accessibility of those jobs is a really good sign for workers who are just entering the labor market.
Of course, the big issue today, and the president talked about it, the president said today that the Fed doesn't know what it's doing. He wants to see continued rate cuts and says things would be much better if the Fed were cutting rates more quickly. With these numbers out and the numbers looking like the economy continues to chug along, it seems less likely that the Fed is going to cut. We thought for sure they were going to cut rates. Even people were talking about a half a point coming up later this month. I mean, what's your read on it now?
Yeah, I would say that this report is certainly a splash of cold water on investor expectations of a deeper rate cut. I think that investors are perhaps overconfident that there will be a rate cut at all in July, but certainly the consensus still seems to be that there will be some cut coming in July.
So maybe a quarter point, but maybe people always thought there was going to be a half point cut. Where there was kind of a pipe dream to begin with?
Yeah, I think that the probability now is higher for a 25 basis point cut. It certainly doesn't seem like there would be evidence in this report for something larger.
I was reading some of the interviews you've done earlier today on this jobs report out, and you said that you were watching the number of job openings because the number of job openings, while they're going up, their pace of increasing is slowing. Tell me about that. Why is that significant? Why does that concern you?
Well, so job openings are a powerful forward-looking indicator for employers' expectations about the economy. So you can't hire or fire people at the drop of a dime, but employers might cut back on job openings or open new ones as they expect the economy to do better or worse. So what we saw in 2018 was double-digit growth in job openings, which is very, very positive. And then at the beginning of 2019, we actually saw that drop into the 1 to 2% range, which is what we're seeing now on Glassdoor. And that's a sign that the labor market is likely to slow down in 2019.
And so as long as it's positive, we're okay, right? But once it starts to get negative, that's when we know there's trouble coming?
Yeah, so I would say that right now the evidence is that the labor market is slowing but not stalling. Once the year-over-year growth flips negative, then we're certainly going to be more concerned about a potential downturn in the future.
How are we doing in the Chicago area when it comes to job growth? I know not too long ago Glassdoor put out their June report for the fastest growing metro areas. You know, we have a real problem with housing here. How are we doing with jobs?
Well, so Chicago was sitting at a 0.5% increase in job openings in June, which is not great, but it's actually very much in line with a lot of the other big cities. So New York was at 0.2%. Los Angeles was actually at minus 0.3%. Whereas you're actually seeing medium-sized cities like Philadelphia or Atlanta really having the highest growth in job openings.
Hey, Boston's in there, too. Why is that? Why are those medium-sized cities growing more quickly than the bigger cities?
Well, some of it might be what you alluded to with housing. So you have cities with lower cost of living, which can be pulling in employers who are looking to attract talent but don't necessarily have the ability to pay the wages to afford for their workers to afford that higher cost of living.
Okay, so is Chicago at a 0.5%? Not great, but you know, anytime you beat New York City, San Francisco, and L.A., you're doing something right. I'll take that.
That's for sure.
And Daniel Zhao is an economist at Glassdoor. Daniel, listen, thanks very much for joining us today. I appreciate all your insight.
Thanks for having me, Steve.
You bet. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch here on 720 WGN. Let's get a look at the. Well, we're going to talk to Tom Gimbel from. Tom Gimbel will be here from the LaSalle Network coming up about, maybe summer doldrums in the office place.
Such a feeling's coming over me.
There You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch here on 720 WGN, sponsored by Wintrust Chicago's Bank. On the phone line now is Tom Gimbel, the CEO of LaSalle Network, joins us from time to time. Tom, welcome back to the Biz Lunch.
Good to be with you, Steve.
Okay, so the 4th of July is behind us. It's summertime. No one is working. What are you doing talking to me on this Friday?
Hogwash that no one's working, number one. Everybody isn't on vacation. It just seems like it. And while perception can be reality, it's a great opportunity for people to show what they're made of. It's a great opportunity for salespeople to get in front of companies that they normally can't get in front of. There's really a lot of opportunities to do during the
summer.
Okay,
we'll get there in a second, but is there a benefit to office-wide slowing down a little bit during the summer?
Well, it depends on where your company is and what industry you're in, and if you're in a growth mode. And there is obviously, you can't go 100 miles an hour, 24/7, 365. So there is to slow down a little bit, but we still have goals to do. And the people that aren't on vacation want to get their work done, and they need to pick up the slack for those that are gone, because in a month or 2 months, they'll reverse, and the other people will be on vacation, and the people who are on vacation will be back.
I used to work with the publishing industry quite a bit. In the summer times, on Fridays, they would shut down. The publishing industry-wide would stop at noon on Fridays all summer long.
Well, it's no different than the furniture industry down in the Carolinas, right, in manufacturing, that historically they've always shut down in August, and people have gotten that time off. And there are certain perks to certain industries.
It's like the car industries, where you can't sell on a Sunday here. You know, they decided to have a state law so they couldn't compete against each other, but they all have that day off. So that's good if it's industry-wide, then you're not losing anything. But if you're just taking the time off on your own, you could be missing some opportunities. I guess that's the point of this.
Yeah, and for, you know, the biggest challenge is for managers. If you have a lot of your staff out, is you've got to remember to keep things interesting and fun, because there's just a different energy level. If there's normally 50 people in an office and now there's 30, you've lost 40% of your office.
Right.
It's going to be a little quieter. It's going to be a little slower. And you as a manager have to think out of the box, whether it's telling people to dress casually, whether it's doing a potluck to keep people engaged with one another, or doing really short-term goals for your team in order for them to get their work done. There's things like that can add a lot of value.
I would imagine, though, if you are that manager and you're at 60% of your workforce, you're not going to get as much done.
Well, maybe not. It also gives a manager more time to spend one-on-one with their staff who is there.
Right.
So if you're working and other people are on vacation, use that time wisely. Don't always be in such a rush to get out just because everybody else is off, where you may be able to bond with coworkers a little bit better. You may be able to bond with your manager. It's one of those things that it's really the lens you look at it through. And if you look at it as nothing's going on, then you're part of that. But if you look at it as while the whatever the expression is, the cat's away, the mice will play.
Right.
An opportunity for you to take advantage of some time with others that you normally wouldn't get. That's a real strong possibility to grow your career.
All right. So how do you spend time, or how do you? I mean, we're talking about sucking up a little bit to the manager. How do you do that without being so obvious about it?
Well, I don't know if there's a matter of obvious or not, or even sucking up. If there's part of your job or part of the business that you don't understand, to go up to your manager during the dog days of summer and go, can I ask you a question? I've been trying to figure this out, or I feel like I haven't done this as well. Would you mind, can we go over this for a little bit? They're going to be more relaxed too, and there's an opportunity to get through some big obstacles there. You'd be surprised. And if your manager sees you in grinding it out when everybody else is gone, psychologically there's just a little something at play there.
Is the whole summer work routine different in a hot jobs market than it is in a cold jobs market?
There's probably something to that, Steve, that you can probably be a little bit more easy come, easy go, because employees are in such high demand. I just don't think, taking advantage of a tight market when you're employed and someone's paying you to do the job is the right way to go about it.
Well, it doesn't.
I do think smart employers make the office more fun during the summer.
I'm sorry, Tom. It doesn't bode well for your individual future if you're playing that game, I would think.
Yeah, it gets a little bit old real quick, and employers know who they can count on, and the companies know who the problem children. And the key is this: have fun, communicate with the people around you, and don't think because everybody else is on vacation time that they've earned that when you're not on vacation time, you should act like you are.
Because Labor Day is just around the corner, and then we're going to have to get right back to it.
We're right back. It never ends, Steve.
Listen,
it never ends.
Have a great weekend. Thanks for joining us today.
Absolutely. Take care.
It's the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch here on 720 WGN, sponsored by Wintrust Chicago's Bank. Art Chris Johnson is in the studio. He's the CEO of Classic Cinemas. Classic Cinemas is probably something you've heard about. I don't know how much you know about them. I didn't know a lot, really. I knew about the Tivoli. But not a lot until I started redirecting up. Chris, welcome to the Biz Lunch.
Thank you for having me.
All right, tell me about Classic Cinemas. Who are you guys?
So Classic Cinemas, we started in August of 1978. My dad and my uncle owned a piece of real estate, and it had the Tivoli Theater. And shortly, they bought it in 77, and then shortly thereafter, the tenant put a close for remodeling sign and kind of skipped out of
That's
town.
A bad sign. So he owned the Tivoli building.
Right, exactly. And like I said, less for a year. They had a lease till 1992. After interviewing some tenants, decided to go into business with the help of the then manager of the business who didn't want to go anywhere else. So it was just by chance. And then
it's flying blind a little bit.
Absolutely. I mean, it was crazy. And I was young. I jumped into the business, I cleaned out the basement, which was really exciting. And I started back in 1980, March of 80, with the first movie I worked was Star Trek, the first movie.
Nice.
Which was thrilling. But, so we got into business, didn't know what we were doing at all, and slowly learned and started acquiring downtown theaters. And at the time, downtowns were kind of dead.
We were leaving it.
Everybody was going to the mall.
So 14 theaters in all.
Yep.
How many of them are vintage sort of restored theaters?
So that's something I should know off the top of my head, but I'm going to guess probably eight.
Yeah. And you just talked about the first movie was the original Star Trek, right?
Yep.
The first R-rated movie I ever saw. My cousin sneaked me in, and it was The Gauntlet starring Clint Eastwood.
Oh, wow.
And Sandra Locke. And it was at a place called the Paramount Theater in Kankakee, Illinois.
Oh, that's ours. Yeah, yeah.
Who would know?
How cool.
30 years later, 25 years later, that I'd be sitting with the CEO of the guy who rescued that theater, right?
Yes.
That's kind of what you do.
I do remember going in there when we were looking at it, and I just said, oh, my gosh, this thing, it had sat for a long time, and it really needed some help. But that was a fun project from the standpoint that we restored the marquee and created the excitement in town, and then we slowly fixed it up and kind of the rest
the
is
the York
history.
And Elmhurst?
Absolutely, the York and Elmhurst. Unbelievable location. I actually managed that when we first got it in the early 80s. The theater, it was a single screen theater, and it had some water damage, and so the ornate ceiling had kind of been wrecked, and so sure. There was a drop ceiling there, and then later
it's
on,
it's like every theater's enemy is a drop ceiling, I would think.
Oh,
right?
yeah, you know what? There's nothing less exciting than a drop ceiling,
right?
You know, so we did go in there, and that was a funny one because we went from a one screen to a three screen to a five screen to a seven screen,
wow,
to a nine screen, and then to a 10 screen. And all of that was by acquiring the adjoining spaces slowly and over time and reconfiguring it. So a lot of work went into that one.
Okay, so this is a business show. You mentioned the fact that downtowns You know, people were fleeing downtowns.
Absolutely.
And then here comes this development. Was it Elmhurst? I was reading one of them where you put $1 million into the facility.
Yeah, I mean, well, quite a few of them. I mean, we absolutely have, you know, it's funny. When you first get into this business and you start rehabbing, you know, it's hundreds of thousands. Then it's a million. Then it's millions. You know, it always seems to get to be more and more expensive.
But the point is, you wouldn't do it if it wasn't good for you.
Right.
But it becomes really good for that downtown.
Absolutely.
Explain that for me.
Yeah, absolutely. So I will say, going back to Elmhurst, the former mayor, Tom Marcucci, always thanks my dad for single-handedly, revitalizing the downtown. But in fact, it is a community effort, and they've been great to work with. But really what it does is it creates a nightlife, and then, you know, that slowly can create dining and other things that that happen in the town. So, you know, we like in Oak Park, we took over the theater there in the early 80s, and they had they mauled in Lake Street, and mm-hmm. and then kind of the business had sort of evaporated, and over time we brought some business back, and then we took the street out, or we didn't take the village took the street out, and lo and behold, business came back, and you know the traffic started flowing.
Okay, so but you still got to get the movies, right? I mean, your locations. I mean,
absolutely,
a vintage place is a beautiful spot. But I'm still going to go choose the movie I want at the time I want.
Yes.
Is it tough for a small chain to get the movies?
So it used to be impossible.
Yeah.
And so that's where our original niche was, the bargain or sub-run
right.
market. And so you had to wait. And what's happened over time is that the public does not want to wait. And so you have to have...
Well, you know, the public doesn't have to wait, right? Because they're coming to their house now.
Right. Absolutely. And so the idea, actually, in October 4th of 2018, last year, we converted our last sort of intermediate run theater in the Ogden 6 in Naperville to first run. So we're 100% first run now. And we did that because... You know, we saw the writing on the wall a long time ago that the bargain theaters just weren't going to make it,
right.
And you had to have the product right away. So we started the fight, going back. Our first run theater was in Freeport, Illinois, the Lindo Theater, home of the Lincoln-Douglas debate, hence the Lindo.
Oh, interesting.
But anyways.
So it was in that theater?
Well, it wasn't in that theater.
Okay,
it was,
yeah.
But it was, they named it after that,
okay.
And, which was kind of neat.
From now on, just say it's in the theater. It's a better story.
Yeah, it's in the theater, yeah. You know. But that was in 1984, and so we had our first multiplex. It was a three screen, and we were in the middle of, you know, kind of nowhere. It was 30 miles west of Rockford, and so we were able to get all the movies. But we really struggled to get any sort of first run movies anywhere else, and then we slowly started making inroads with the studios and performing. And really, when it comes down to is, are you grossing for the film company? But there is a lot of competitive nature where the other circuits would...
They want to keep you out.
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely.
Okay, so one of my beefs about the movie business, the movie theaters.
Yep.
I'm sure you've heard this before. It just costs so much for popcorn and for
yes.
sodas. But what I heard was that it's because the movie companies charge so much for to show the films that the only way the movie theaters make money is on concessions. Is that fair or not fair?
It's somewhat fair. I would agree with you. And candidly, the one policy we adopted, actually, it was in 1995. We adopted free refills on all sizes of popcorn, all sizes of drinks, ices, everything. And we didn't just do it on the large because that's sometimes you get
right,
these
right.
crazy big.
That's
you know,
6 weeks of popcorn.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So we adopted that policy because we do know, you know, it's kind of like give you more than you really need, but make you feel good about it.
Right.
And so the refill thing really helped. But yes, the margins on the movie have, it used to be kind of we as the movie as the movie theater got more, and then it was even, and now it's absolutely in favor of the studio And
you need to turn to concessions.
Absolutely.
This is a Wintrust show. You're a Wintrust community leader.
I am.
So tell me how it is that Wintrust can help you save the world.
Yes.
Save these main streets.
That is a great question. So Wintrust, we have had a relationship with them. They're a little bit like us, only, 1,000 times bigger, but their kind of start was in these downtowns and communities.
Yeah.
And
so very local.
Yeah, exactly. So we had a relationship, going back with them trying to bring business to the downtown. But candidly, we have to reinvest in our theaters. And going back to, 2012, 2011, 2012, we had to do a $7 million upgrade to digital from film, which is a big one, and they helped in that. And we also, now the big thing is recliners. So
if my family's listening, they know I'm shaking my head.
Not a recliner fan?
I don't. You know what, Chris? I want to be able to just go to a movie on the spur of the moment.
Right, right.
And the recliners so limit the number of seats,
yeah,
that you've got to plan in advance.
A little bit. It is one of those, it's one of those things that doesn't make a whole lot of sense, but at the end of the day, if you don't have them, you're really in jeopardy of going out.
Because people now, they understand it.
Yeah, they expect them. And actually, it's funny, we started off with the recliners, and then we went to dual motor recliners, so we have a separate headrest, and then we went to heated recliners, and it just keeps going on and on and on. So we are reinvesting constantly back into the into the theaters and trying to do what makes sense. And that one, some people said, well, I think that's a gimmick, but
it's not a gimmick anymore because it's become expected,
right? And it's a comfort. I say it's like air conditioning. Air conditioning isn't a gimmick. It's a comfort, right. And I think the seats are the same way. 3D, we followed the trends with that. And if you remember, there was how many 3D TV stations,
right,
and movies,
right,
and all that, and that certainly pulled back. But I would say this is it is a real big challenge, though, because when you take the capacity and eliminate 2/3 of your seating. It's kind of like a Southwest flight now where, it's a rarity when there's an empty seat.
Right,
you know?
Right. But you're also guaranteed or more likely that they're going to put their money up early.
Yes.
So they're going to show up at the theater.
Yes, absolutely.
Chris Johnson is the CEO of Classic Cinemas. I could talk to you forever. thanks for coming
Likewise.
In. I appreciate you coming in. Let's do it again.
Thank you.
It's the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Thanks very much, Orion Samuelson, Steve Bertrand here on the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust Chicago's Bank. Art, earlier in the week, we played for you an interview with Steve Robinson, the longtime marketing chief at Chick-fil-A, and we weren't able to touch on some of the more confrontational issues when it comes to Chick-fil-A and their recent history, and so I wanted to play you that part of the interview today. You can always check out more at our podcast at WGNradio.com, but Steve Robinson talks about how they like to make eating chicken fun.
We decided we want to position Chick-fil-A as unexpectedly fun, high quality, but not your traditional fast food. Everything about it was different, better, but we really wanted a personality of fun because, quite frankly, the restaurants are fun. They've always had a history of being fun.
Steve, they have the reputation, too, deserved or undeserved, as being anti-gay. When Dan Cathay spoke about gay marriage, I think it was in 2012, that certainly created a firestorm for you. Still being felt in San Antonio at the airport there and in Buffalo.
Yeah.
As a marketing director, how do you deal with that? I mean, this is a company that is based on, it's very Christian. It's closed on Sundays, which makes the numbers, the sale numbers, even more remarkable that it's only open six days a week.
Yeah, unbelievable.
But that's a real issue, too. And how does the company deal with that?
Well, the way we dealt with it, and I think the way they're still dealing with it, of course, I don't work there anymore.
Sure.
But we talked to customers. We talked to the operators, and it became very clear that Chick-fil-A had a history of not being involved in political and social agendas and commentary, and we were just going to go back to that. And we're going to stay focused on what we're good at, which is hospitality. And, in fact, one of the things we learned in our research was customers really perceive Chick-fil-A to be a place where they experience really good food, good service, and a hospitable environment. And we're going to stay focused on that.
Did it hurt business?
It did not.
It did not. Did it help business?
May have. You know, may have. Chick-fil-A's been a hot brand. I think there's a myriad of reasons, menu, hospitality, cow campaign. But I don't think it hurt the business. I think people recognize what Chick-fil-A, let me rephrase that. I think they re-recognize what Chick-fil-A stands for. I mean, after all, you referenced that this is a business that's closed on Sunday.
Right.
So it shouldn't have been a big surprise. But I think Dan realized he got outside his lane. He entered into political commentary, and that wasn't our history, and I know they're committed that it won't be their history going forward.
If it did help business, how did it help business? By reintroducing people, by energizing the current customers, or what do you think the impact was?
I think you hit it right on the head, Steve. Regardless of people's perception or impression of Chick-fil-A at the time, we were still relatively a regional brand, kind of low awareness numbers. I think it just raised the profile of the brand, and people did their homework. I think more people had curiosity about the business and visited it for the first time. And when people visit Chick-fil-A for the first time, I think a lot of them are surprised at not just the quality of the food, but the cordial quality of the hospitality.
So
we want a lot of new customers.
I know you're not there now, but there is this fight, and I think there's the Save Chick-fil-A bill in Texas, and it was banned from an airport in Buffalo. How would you advise the company to deal with that, the lingering impact? No, I mean, the values haven't changed. I know there was a report out saying that the Chick-fil-A donated money to groups that work against gay marriage and gay rights. I mean, how would you advise them to deal with all of that here in 2019?
Well, I retired 3 years ago, so I don't advise them anymore.
Yeah.
But I think they're doing the right thing. They're just sticking to their knitting. They're not making any comments other than we're in the business of serving everybody. And that's what they're doing. And I think that's a very smart position to take.
Retired 3 years ago, and you spent some of that time writing the book, Covert Cows and Chick-fil-A, How Faith, Cows, and Chicken Built an Iconic Brand. Other than that, a lot of fishing. How's retirement?
Not a lot of fishing.
And you're not eating
more golf. But I found out, Steve, that a book not only takes a lot of time, but marketing a book takes a lot of time. So I'm busy traveling and doing book signing events and doing the occasional speech. And quite frankly, a whole new season on my career that I really didn't expect. And I'm very thankful for it. I'm having a good time.
Steve Robinson, listen, thanks for joining us today. I appreciate it.
You're welcome, Steve. Thanks for your interest.
You're listening.
Eat more chicken.
Eat more chicken. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch here on 720 WGN.